Blog Talk Radio.
What's it like to own somebody, Miss Cullen? Any different than owning a dog or a pig or a plow?
I treated my people well, if that's what you're asking.
Your people? You make it sound like they was family to you.
Well, one of them practically raised me after my mother died.
Yeah, but you'd be owning her. Even when she changed her dirty drawers, you'd still be owning her. I wouldn't mind owning me a white woman. Yes, sir. That might be nice. Maybe I'll bring her in from the fields of the evening and have me some fun.
Watch yourself.
What if she give me a baby boy? Would I own that too? Or would half of him be free? And what if I bring that boy into my house from time to time and teach him to read and write? And I give that boy just enough hope to think that maybe, just maybe, he's different. Different than all the other white folk I own. Nah. He ain't no different. He just a mule. Everybody know a mule ain't no horse. Ain't that right, Miss Cullen?
Electric word life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor, all hail funkin' lesson, sweet tongue grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold, born in a cosmos, where no time and space do exist, vibe in the midst of the chaos, mortals label me as a locker.
You're traveling to another radio show, a broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Diva, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Yes. It is the Midweek in Review show, folks. This is Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. By the way, that quick intro was from Hell on Wheels. I know. Being the Afro Nerd, being that we do the comic shop coming up this Saturday at 6 p.m., we often talk about the obvious AMC TV programming with Walking Dead, or I should say The Walking Dead, Robert Kirkman's Walking Dead. They have other shows. One of those shows is Hell on Wheels, and that was, I believe, a diatribe, or I should say a dialogue, to be more specific, a dialogue from season one with the great Common. Common, you know him as a supreme hip-hop artist, but he appears to be a fairly decent actor. So I think we're already in season three of Hell on Wheels, but I wanted to give him his props. Again, that's Common doing his thing, rather provocative post-bellum dialogue. All right, let's get to a quick groove, and then we have the captain with his brief diatribe. Let's give it about 2 minutes, folks. This is Rock and Roll, Mos Def. Or I think he goes by Yasin Bey now. Anyway, Mos Def, Yasin Bey, Rock and Roll, 2 minutes. We'll be right back. Let's groove.
Alert the squad.
Rock roll,
alert the squad.
Rock roll,
whoa.
My grandmama was raised on a reservation. My great-grandmama was from a plantation. They sang songs for inspiration. They sang songs for relaxation. They sang songs to take their minds up off that fucked up situation. I am, yes I am, the descendant of those folks who backs got broke, who fell down inside the gun smoke.
Black people,
chains on their ankles and feet. I am descendants of the builders of your streets.
Black people,
descendants to your cotton money. I am hip-hop,
heavy metal for the black people.
I am rock and roll,
rock and roll, rock and roll.
Been here forever. They just ain't let you know. I said Elvis Presley ain't got no soul. Chuck Berry is rock and roll. You may dig on the Rolling Stones, but they ain't come up with that style on their own. Elvis Presley ain't got no soul. Little Richard is rock and roll. You may dig on the Rolling Stones, but they ain't come up with that shit on their own. Guess that's just the way it goes. Steal my clothes and try to say they yo.
Yes they do.
Business is so filled with pimps and hoes, trying to take everything that you made in control.
There they go.
Elvis Presley ain't got no soul. Bo Diddley is rock and roll.
Right.
You may just go on the Rolling Stones, but they ain't the first place the credit belongs. Say whoa, oh, gon' take it. Ooh, we go back to the
All right, once again, Yasiin Bey, otherwise known as Most Def, rock and roll. This is Afro featuring Captain Kirk. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Captain, it's your time. I believe you're needed in the ready room. Let's get to it, sir.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
Now, I'm going to talk about immigration from a perspective that you probably have not ever, ever, ever heard before. Now listen up. You ever wonder why when you turn to the left of you, you see Arab, the right, you turn, you see Muslim, you see a Latin person to the front of you, you see a white person behind you, you see Korean, you see Japanese, Chinese, i.e. the global village, i.e. the global village. I'm going to explain how we get this here in a place called America. Now, there's a couple of principles you must understand. I said before on previous shows that when you look at the neighborhoods from outer space, they look like electrical circuits. So let's talk about basic electricity via Ohm's law. Voltage is equal to amps times resistance. This is basic stuff that they teach the Verizon people, you know, the people that put in their poles, anybody who's into electricity, basic stuff. Ohm's law, real simple. The Afro-nerd listener is rather intelligent, so they can do these simple equations. Voltage equals amps times resistance. And if you manipulate the Ohm's law equation, you do other things. You get equations for resistance. You get equations for amps. Now, another thing you must understand is what a capacitor is. This is a device used to store an electric charge. Another thing you must understand briefly, what a diode is. Diode is an electrical device that restricts current flow chiefly to one direction. This is necessary for you to understand. Now, a circuit breaker, most of you understand what that is. I don't have to explain that to you. Now, in the Jewish community, they have diodes that allow energy. What is this energy? Money. As I explained, a diode is an electric device that restricts current flow chiefly to one direction. So the energy, which is money, is flowing into the Jewish community. Then they have a circuit breaker that will not allow the energy to flow out. What is the circuit breaker, where the circuit just breaks? That's their religion. You understand? Because what they do is, via their religion, they are linked. They spend money with each other. The money flips in their neighborhood. Depending on which study you read, it says anywhere between 25, 26. One study I read, it said 32 times. Their religion keeps the money within their neighborhood, but they will allow, via the diode, an electric device that restricts current flow, money flow in this case, chiefly to one direction. They will allow the money from you to flow to them. Very nice, beautiful system. But we're not here just talking about the Jewish community. We're talking about the global village. Now, via the UN, whether it's Obama, whether it's Bush, whether it's Clinton, or any one of these individuals, whoever's in the president seat, they go to other countries, they destroy their countries, and then they set up a Federal Reserve Bank. Now, what begins to flow out of the country is the money energy and also the natural resources. They do not allow the people to nationalize the energy or the natural resources. So you living in this country automatically have to do what? The energy is not there anymore. Human beings naturally follow the energy flow. So now you have to leave the place that you were born into, born, and go to the United States, because the flow of the energy via diode is coming to the United States. This is how it's done all across the world. This is how you actually get immigration, because most people rather live in their country. What they will do is they will visit. How so, Captain? What are you talking about? When people are rich, let's take the Mexican people who have money. They live in their country. They just come here via tourism. That's all they do, and they go back to their country because they have money. The ones that do not have the money are crossing the border. The reason why the border cross is so critical is because the energy is being sucked out of that country or other countries and pulled into the United States. You as a human being follow the flow of the energy. You come here to work. This is what's happening at a very high level. Now, it is a very beautiful system as long as the energy flow is flowing into the United States. Now, what happens when you stop the energy flow? We break down into monoculture. But, Captain, I like the multiculturalism. I like turning around, seeing this one, seeing that one, seeing being with the white woman, being with the Asian woman. That's all fine underneath multiculturalism, as long as the energy is flowing in. We start to pull away the energy and introduce a stressor, things change. Now, what happens in prison? All of us are raised pretty much at this given time underneath multiculturalism. Let me tell you what happens in prison. You introduce a stressor. The prison is the stressor. And what are you making in prison? It might cost money to keep you there, but what do you make if you work? $1 an hour, $1.50 an hour? So what happens is blacks go with blacks, whites go with whites, Latins go with Latins, Asians go with Asians, the few Asians that are there. Multiculturalism breaks down. Maybe you don't get that. Next, what happened in California? Didn't California have money problems? Hey, the energy flow bottlenecked. So places that were notoriously white and black, all of a sudden the Latin community is pushing these people out. How did that happen? We're underneath multiculturalism. Things begin to break down when the energy is not flowing in. Docile white people, pretty much, as they would say, and not so docile. I'll get into that at another time. But Obama gets into the White House, a black man leading the country. What do white people do? They go out and buy guns left and right. Why? Because from their standpoint, a stressor was introduced into their life. You see how multiculturalism works? You see how the global village works? Now, I'm going to stop right there and hand it back over to AfroNerd. This is just something for you to think about, because what we have right now, and it's cool and it works, but it is an unnatural situation that we're in, and you need a lot of energy to keep it going. Back over to you, Sir AfroNerd.
Okay, Captain, as always, we appreciate your insight. Folks, this is the Midweek in Review edition of AfroNerd featuring Captain Kirk, a.k.a. AfroNerd Radio. Just a couple of anecdotal things. Oh, also, let me shout out our friend Sergio Mims. Sergio, I got your email. I don't know if I don't remember responding, and my apologies. I may or may not be available this weekend because we are going to be busy. I was hoping you might be coming through NYC at the top of the year. I'll contact you behind the scenes to let you know exactly what's going on, but I might not be able to make it to the city. Anyway, folks, a couple of things. First, congratulations to Chris Christie. He was reelected as New Jersey's governor. And New York City has a new mayor Bill de Blasio. And he has an interesting story because he has a, speaking of multiculturalism, he has a multicultural family. And I always vote, I should say to be more specifically, the AfroNerd lineage, the AfroNerd family, the Oracle, the Wedger, and myself as a family, we actually vote when we have an opportunity, we will vote together. We will set up the time to actually vote together as a family. Voting in my family is a big deal. We may not like to do it because of the inconvenience of it sometimes, but we do make an effort to vote because, bluntly, many black folk died or suffered greatly to give us the opportunity, give us the right to vote or the privilege to vote. So it's something that we certainly do not take for granted. But I will say this. Voting in a predominantly Democratic district is very interesting. I voted in the primary a few months ago leading up to this mayoral contest. And they had old machines there. I think I might have mentioned this on air, Captain. And it became plainly known that the AfroNerd is a conservative person because I'm trying to move these levers for the right, toward the right, I should say jokingly, but for the right, and I could not. And I said, wait a minute, I've voted countless times before. I know I'm doing it right as a double entendre. I know I'm doing it right, but it's not allowing me to vote a certain way. I go to one of the helpers there. I say, excuse me, something's wrong with the machine. I can't vote. It won't let me vote. Well, what's the problem? And I kind of had to admit who I was voting for, which was Loda. Loda is the Republican candidate. So I was like, they said, you're Republican? And then I swear, maybe this is a predominantly black neighborhood. It seemed as if half the folks at this voting place looked around like as if I was a unicorn. So they had to actually reconfigure the machine to allow me to vote Republican. And I didn't vote Republican all the way, but I voted Republican for that specific position. And this time they had, you know, I don't know why that is. This time they didn't have the machines. They just had, you know, you just fill out a form. And they scanned the form. But for the primaries, they had these old machines cast in. Now, the Oracle tells me that when he was voting, and I suspect he voted Democratic, incidentally, he got caught up in the Afro. And I'll explain that to those who may not be familiar with what the Blasio's family looks like. He said that one of the voting assistants had said, you know, just vote Democrat all the way down. Just, you know, just vote Democratic all the way down. Without a care, Captain. Just, you know, it's just a given. This is a cultural thing. This is just a formality. Just a formality. When you leave the school, you know, they have these precincts usually in schools and churches. People on loudspeakers, people with bullhorns saying, "Vote Democratic, vote Democratic." I'm like, what is this? You see what I'm saying here, Captain? This is at least a little less than half the reason why, just on surface level alone, why I have to go the opposite direction, why I have to be a contrarian. Because it's offensive that just because I'm a man of color, the Oracle is a man of color, that these other folks of color are instructing him in a rather matter-of-factly way, just mark down Democratic all the way down. Don't even think about it. Just, you know, mark it D all the way down and move along. Really? And even the Oracle said, "Wow, that's a little much. You know, you should be allowed to vote." And I will say, I am for the concept of multiculturalism. I don't necessarily disagree with what you spoke about before, Captain. When it comes to financial matters, Black folk need to be flipping their dollars, not unlike Jewish folk and Asian folk and Indian folk, everybody else. We need to be on that. We need to be about flipping the Black dollar multiple times. I think it just flips once. Is that correct, Captain?
I think it's just once.
Some dollars are being flipped 10 times, 10 times, 16, like you said, as upwards to 30 times, and you wonder why we stay losing once in the Black community. That is extremely problematic. Anyway, Mr. de Blasio, listen, I had the call of the tribe too. I'm not going to lie. I had the call of the tribe. I got caught up in his family structure as well. I'm very much into modern things, and I think his family represents a modern aesthetic. He has a African-American wife, two multiracial children who appear very Africoid in their appearance, and also in their politics. Dante de Blasio, you could go to YouTube and see this. He was campaigning for his father, as any young man would do, and he sports a huge Michael Jackson 1972-esque afro, huge afro. So to have this white man produce a child that is very, again, Africoid in his appearance, and has that big afro, people, let's face it, people dig that. People, I jokingly talked about this a few weeks ago, I think a few shows ago, Captain, when Cheryl Underwood, the comedian Cheryl Underwood from The Talk, got into hot water by saying some things very derogatory toward African hair, toward Black hair, very derogatory. And then she had to end up apologizing for it. I had said, and it has come true, it has definitely come true, Captain, that nasty, dirty hair, as she put it, because again, she spoke very, very disparaging, that nasty, dirty hair allowed this man to walk into Gracie Mansion, which is a mansion that the mayor, the New York, for those who are not aware of New York politics, just as Obama sits in the White House, the mayoral version of that is Gracie Mansion. Coyd Hair is largely responsible for this. I would say largely responsible because they keep on making references to the Fro. Thank the Fro, bro, is what you see the way that it's being put out there in the news, in the periodical. So that Afrikoid Hair has allowed him to walk into Gracie Mansion, into one of the most powerful positions really in the world. In the world. I'm not even saying just the country, in the world. To be the mayor of New York City is, because New York City really is the epicenter of the world. So he has, you know, he is one of the, if you want to take delineate the power positioning of political roles in the world, the mayor of New York City would be up there, Catherine. It would have to be. Let's say the top 30 positions in the world, the mayor of New York City would be it.
Probably top 20.
I'm trying to stretch it out. I would probably say top 10.
Yeah.
To be honest,
have to come through New York to do business. So there you go.
I think you hear more about the mayor of New York City than you do of the mayor of L.A.
Absolutely,
you do, or the mayor of D.C. The mayor of New York, New York City specifically, is an extremely powerful position. You heard about Mayor Bloomberg all the time. So anyway, congrats to them. I voted for Loda. And not so much about just to be such a contrarian, but Mr. de Blasio is rabidly liberal, Captain. Rabidly liberal.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking about dismantling, helping to dismantle Stop and Frisk. And as a man of color, yes, I support Stop and Frisk. I do. I look at it as urban data mining. I've said this before. We've got to do something. And folks keep on reminding me that the murder rate in New York City, in New York State, but let's say New York City specifically, was in the thousands at one time. People forget that the murder rate, because Mr. de Blasio, Mayor de Blasio, or Mayor-elect de Blasio, bears the distinction of being the first Democratic mayor in over 24 years. It's been that long. Dinkins was the last Democratic mayor. So folks are nervous that when we had a Democratic mayor, we had high crime rates. And now for a city of this size, Captain, to have a couple of hundred murders a year, when you see how Chirac, shouting out Surge, shouting out Kim Success, how Chirac's numbers are, they get a couple of hundred deaths in a few months. We had it in the thousands at one time. We're down to 1960 levels. So I'm more of a pragmatist. But the Fro was very – the Fro was very – I will say that much. Seeing a young man of color, big Afro, supporting his family. And also I did not like – he has a beautiful daughter as well who also came in. She played second fiddle somewhat. She didn't like the fact that Dante was getting all the attention. Chiara, I think her name is. Chiara or Chiara. She's not hard on the eyes. I think she's 19, 20 years of age. One thing that we have to acknowledge is – what am I trying to say here? I don't want to be too guttural. You know what? I'll stop it here. I'll let it lie. I'll just say this. But, well, congratulations to the de Blasios. I just hope that we I hope we remain safe. Any thoughts, Captain? You going to go to a musical break?
No thoughts.
All right,
no thoughts.
Again, folks, call in number 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. We're going to go to another black rock, Afro-punk, urban alternative, psychedelic soul break. You know, we play the best of urban alternative music here. This is... actually, it's a cover from The Police, King of Pain, by a band called Pain. We'll be back in a few moments. King of Pain, cover. Let's groove. Mm-hmm. King of Pain, covered by the Police. Always giving the best of urban alternative music, folks. The call-in number, this is the Midweek in Review show, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. So you have a caller. I think I know what it is. Before we answer the phone, I do want to mention one quick thing also. This is something just to put out there, Captain. You know, the Daily News, the New York Daily News, covered something that I thought was just, I don't know how I'm supposed to feel about it, because you know how I feel about certain names and certain locations. I get a little antsy. A young man by the name of Quinshawn Shingles, ladies and gentlemen, a up-and-coming hip-hop artist or burgeoning rapper or rapper wannabe, he's suing the NYPD. Because, let me read this from, actually this is from the Post. Let me read this, what it says here. It was Rhyme and Punishment. A Brooklyn man says he was forced to rap for a crew of NYPD cops to get out of handcuffs and warned that if his rhymes weren't hot enough, they wouldn't free him. Quinshawn Shingles coerced Diddy about booze, bitches, and weed was good enough to get him released and enough to prompt a scathing Brooklyn federal court lawsuit. I felt like they were humiliating me, says Shingles, whose rap name is Sauce Da Boss, to the Post on Tuesday.
They were all Caucasian officers, and I'm a black man, and they had me performing for my freedom. I was really upset. Shingles 28 said his cousin and another male pal were at the cousin's East New York home in December 2011 when the plainclothes officers arrived demanding to perform a search to suit states. The cousin, Tyreek Fortune, Tyreek Fortune was suspected of a criminal offense, the suit says, although it's unclear exactly what the alleged crime was. One of the cops, David Grieco, is already under investigation for illegal entries elsewhere. Fortune's mom, Danielle Kitchens, refused to allow the cops in without a warrant, and the officers agreed to come back later, the suit says. But instead of getting a warrant, the officers convinced a building super to give them keys to the pad, according to the suit. Once inside the home, the officers then handcuffed Shingles, Fortune, and the third man while they did a search, the suit states. Then the cops allegedly decided to break for a musical interlude after learning that Shingles was an aspiring rapper. They said, "Rap something if you want to go home," Shingles said. "I was scared. I was nervous. I didn't want to go to jail." Shingles said he was handcuffed on the ground and leaning against a couch, which he recited lyrics from an obscenity-laced party song he penned a couple of months earlier. The cops approved of the rendition and let him walk with, according to the suit. His non-rapping pals remained cuffed. The search of the apartment did not turn up any illegal items, the suit states. And there you go. I don't know what this is, Captain. I'm not saying this stuff doesn't happen, but listen, you know how I feel. I have a problem when folks just conform to certain stereotypes. I mean, you did rap because you know you could rap. I don't know. You know, maybe if they found out that you were a trumpeter, they would have preferred for you to do some kind of Louis Armstrong rendition, but we know that wouldn't happen. We know that wouldn't happen because all black kids rap. I say that facetiously, but that's kind of where we are right now. We have folks that appear to conform to certain stereotypes, and they conform to conforming. I don't know. I get weirded out when I hear East New York and Quinshawn and Tyreek. Those names. You know, I don't see those names connected to excellence. I see those names connected to criminality. Maybe it's a biases, Captain. Maybe it is a biases. But when I make these judgments, I'm very rarely wrong. This time he got lucky. You know, the reaction of the mother to say, "Well, you need a warrant to come in here," that contributes to suspicion. You know, what are your thoughts? You might think differently. I mean, I know ultimately there's some wrong took place here if we're to believe this suit, but it just sounds goofy as hell.
Well, I do this without no emotion. I'll just base this on the evidence that was presented in the article. Based on that evidence, the police officers are wrong. That's it. That's no emotion. I'm not going to get involved with the names and everything else. We do know how that goes, but you have to do this with no emotion. And that's just the way it is, based on the evidence that's presented in the article. The officers are wrong, based on this evidence that was presented in the article. Now, if something else comes out, that's different. But based on what was presented there, it's cut and dry, A to B, 1 plus 1, the officers were wrong. And that's what I have to go on. I'm not going to go on anything else. I block all emotion from the situation and make an A to B, 1 to 1 situation. That's all.
I'm not disagreeing with you whatsoever. And I said I believe, just as what happened with the shop and frisk fiasco that's happening in New York, I just feel that we're setting ourselves up to be victims. That's all. You know, I don't think this happens to every black person, you know, although sometimes these arguments, the position, you're led to feel as if this is a black, wholesale black problem. This is happening to a certain set of black folk. Didn't you say, Captain, one time you were doing some filming for a documentary? I never forgot this. And that the folks came up to you. It was so bad that you had to walk away just for a respite. You had to walk away for a moment because
we'll go to the calls.
But go to that for a moment.
Wow, you take me back there. I wanted to forget about that.
I'm sure you did. But listen, you have to juxtapose that with a story of someone going into your home by the name of Quinshawn and the whole unraveling of a stereotype.
Well, okay. We were filming the Gil C. Alisea project in the Bronx, in the BX. Hilton Ariel Ruiz and myself. And when you're interviewing the people for the backdrop of the story, his friends, some of the family members, it's just a horror story. Horror story. Not even an American horror story, as they have the series. It was worse. Everything. Let me tell you, man. The brother is sleeping with the sister. The sister is raped by the father. All type of madness with these stories. It was going crazy. So you get so much of this toxic waste going on. You have to take a break. That's what was happening. You come home from the place, from the BX. Now, don't get me wrong. Not everywhere in BX was like this. What we were dealing with in the BX, it was like this. So let's not get this all messed up. What we were dealing with, it was like this. Your experience might be totally different. So you come home and you just want to get in the shower and let the water run over your head.
I can imagine.
And then you have to go back out there tomorrow. You're like, oh, man, here we go, boy.
It just sounds like a culture of victimization.
Yeah.
Culture. Like, not that people aren't victims. We know that folks can be victims, but there's also such a thing as a culture of victimization where it doesn't stop and you accept it as a part of your life. And you perceive yourself at every turn as a victim. And I just feel that even with the stop and frisk thing, when it is put out, that's a misnomer. That's misleading. Not all black men are getting stopped. When you go down that list of adjectives, descriptors, quantifiers, qualifiers, black and other things, I would never greenlight wholesale. I would never greenlight, Catherine. I know you too, you as well. You would never greenlight wholesale racial profiling. You just can't be a black person and then he just stop you. But you're given the impression that's all that it is. But if you're black, young, wearing a certain item, living in a certain neighborhood with a high crime rate, of a certain demographic, there's got to be a whole host of qualifiers for someone to have suspicion about you. And exactly where you are. If you're within a few hundred feet of a known drug spot and you speak to somebody that's a known drug dealer, you might have to be stopped. Now, if it's not going down that way, that has to be examined. But putting out there all black men, because black women are getting rifled through, it's black. Even the gender issue is there. There's got to be male 15 to 25, Brownsville, whatever, a litany of things. But just wholesale black man, of, let's say, Reverend Al's age and dress code, is he being rifled with? I don't think so. But you're led to believe that's the case. And the same thing with these guys. This guy happens to be a rap artist, 28 years old, East New York, might be in close proximity to some known drug den. Now we have to proclaim victimization when, you know, and I'm not saying what these cops did was dirty. It looks like something is up, but this is his lawsuit. This has to be, there's a defense to this as well. So we'll see what happens. Let's go to the phones. I think I know this is 312, Africa Radio. Is it coming up? I'm a little sluggish right now. I think it's coming through. Is this Serge?
Yeah, it is.
Hey, Serge.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes, we can.
Loud and clear.
Oh, okay.
What's up, sir?
Just a few things, real fast. In terms of de Blasio, the mayor of New York, and the son whose hair I am so jealous of, really am jealous, wish I had that hair. Here's the thing. I understand that the thing that really impressed me about him is that I understand that his wife was a lesbian.
Oh, that's correct. There's an Essence article going back to 1980-something where she talked about life as a lesbian, and then now she's, you know, not.
You see, so here's the thing. He's a hell of a man, because how did he convert her? Now, the other thing is that either that or he makes love like a woman. So you can read it any kind of way you want. That's what impresses me. So, wow. You know, that's like a man's ultimate dream. How can I convert her? So anyway, the other thing is that did you see the Jimi Hendrix documentary yesterday on PBS?
I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, I did see it. I actually saw it today on my phone on PBS.org. I did see it.
Yes, it is available on the website. I thought it was a pretty good, straightforward documentary. It was pretty good. I mean, it wasn't revolutionary in any way. I thought it was pretty good. The really great thing was all the footage they have of him performing, which most of it I had never seen before. And also the music, all the music that they had. They evidently got the rights or cleared the rights to get a lot of his music on that thing. If you haven't seen it, folks, check it out. You can see it on the PBS website. I thought it was pretty good. It wasn't the greatest documentary ever, but it's pretty solid, and particularly if you really don't know a lot about him and its importance, this is a great place to start.
Okay.
Well, you know what, Serge? One thing I liked was, well, first of all, we know that Jimi Hendrix was a phenomenal guitarist. He always was very shy about that. You know, when he was called the greatest guitar player, he didn't really like people fawning over him about with that ability. And he was still a very young man when he died, 27. And Electric Lady Studios, that development. But one thing, and I'm glad you brought him up. One thing I couldn't stop thinking about was, why did black folks not get with Jimi Hendrix? Because when you listen to the music, I think at that time, Sergio, it was something about black folk perceiving that music to be, and I guess it was marketed that way, to be so much of a white rock thing. But when you actually sit down and listen to the music, it's blues. I mean, we know it's blues, but he was a blues musician. He just had an electrified sound. But it was all the way as black as Elmore James or any of these other blues artists. He was influenced by Muddy Waters. He got his bones from a lot of soul acts, the Isley Brothers,
right.
Little Richard. You know, so what I don't understand is, like, when I listen to the music, and I'm a big Jimi Hendrix fan, I'm sitting there and I listen to it even with a third ear. I mean, this music is black music, and yet we have no structure in the black community, aside from Afropunk, to listen to his music, because I think he is still perceived as a white phenomenon, if you get my drift, that we have allowed him to be co-opted by white rock culture as if he's not part of the black community. Did you pick that up?
That's never really been discussed. Well, the documentary, that's maybe the biggest part of the documentary. It doesn't go into that much. It kind of touches on it, but it doesn't really go deep into that. Maybe there was a longer cut that did, and they cut that stuff out. I put into what I call the box, in quotation marks, the box. That too many black people, and I mean black people, I'm talking specifically about African Americans, put themselves in or allow themselves to be in, that I am in this box. I cannot be allowed to step outside this box, or else I am not black enough. I had a conversation a few months ago with a guy who, say, African American, and I was telling him that, you know, African American is one black experience. It is not the total black experience. It is not an African experience. It is not a black British experience. It is not a black South American experience or European experience. It is one experience of all black people on the planet. And he couldn't wrap his head around that. he looked at me like I was nuts. In other words, being African-American is the definition of being black.
Really?
And anything else outside of that is something on another planet.
I want you to stay on the line because we have another call. I want you to stay on while we open up the other line.
Okay.
But I find that disturbing that he's comfortable with there being a one singular box. There's a lot of different things. Like the Jimi Hendrix story is one of a number of stories that is inherently American, inherently African-American, because it wasn't anything so unique about Jimi Hendrix that would take him out of the black experience. But he was so revolutionary in how he developed his sound and that his sound was so appealing to white folk. But I don't know. I'm just lost at it because when you listen, because the music was great during that documentary. And I just don't understand. And it sounded very black to me. If I'm going to be using the term black, it was a blues bassy sound. And for some reason, we've yet to really embrace. We're just going to let that ride. The greatest guitarist the world has known, and we really not. We've never really taken ownership of Jimi Hendrix.
And can
as
I
a
say
community,
one thing real fast before
as
the other caller comes in?
Thing.
Let me say one thing real fast before the other caller comes in.
Sure.
I was looking at Hendrix, the thing last night, you realize how many few musicians, black musicians, there are today. This man was an extraordinary musician. You can't call a lot of these black acts today musicians, even
not
if they can read music in the first place.
This man was playing behind
there was one
his
guy,
neck, playing with his teeth.
There was one guy who said in the document that you saw him with the guitar all the time, even now on stage, in the bathroom, in the bedroom, on the street. He was always with his guitar, always practicing,
trying
to discover something different.
Making breakfast with that guitar in his hand. He never let go of that thing. That's
right.
That's a real musician. And the fact that we make a big deal about Chris Brown. Like, you know, he has musician under his name. Really? I mean, I don't – hold on, sir. Let's go to this call. We got about 6 minutes
all
remaining.
Right.
I want to talk about 12 Years a Slave. I want the captain to weigh in on that as well. He actually got a chance to
see
that.
Yeah, that's what
I
wanted to talk about, too, very briefly. I wanted to talk about that, too.
We got to make it quick. 267, Afro Radio, tell us who you are. We got about 6 minutes.
Yeah, I just wanted to say in terms of, like, the slave movies that have come out now, like 12 Years a Slave, The Butler, and Django Unchained, there's been recent comments by a Dr. Welsing about these movies and the fact that this might be a negative type of propaganda against the black community, the fact that these movies are coming out, because it's portraying blacks in stereotypical roles that are kind of a throwback to a past era. And since we have a black president, we should be seeing roles where blacks are depicted as superheroes and as leads in action movies and not as slaves and butlers.
First of all, we do have black people in leads in action films. I mean, there have been none. You can name them. There have been a bunch of them. The other thing, too, is that have you seen 12 Years a Slave? Let me ask you that. Have you seen the movie?
Yes, I've seen The Butler and 12 Years a Slave. I've seen both.
And what did you think of – well, let me – this has to do with 12 Years. What did you think of 12 Years a Slave?
I thought it was a very good film, but the main type of criticism that's coming out now is why put these types of depictions – in the movie theater when we have a black man who's the head of the free world.
If the movie came out before 2008, you wouldn't have a problem with it. If the movie came out before 2008, before he got elected, you wouldn't have a problem with it. Or if it came out after 2016, after he's out of office, you wouldn't have a problem with it.
What you're saying? But what a lot of the critics are saying is that this is a form of slave type of propaganda which is being perpetrated on the black community now at this point in time.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Did you see Django?
These stereotypical roles.
Did you see Django?
Yes, I saw Django, The Butler, and 12 Years a Slave. I saw all three.
Okay, Django, what happens? He goes in. He kills every damn white person in the whole damn movie, even women.
Yes. But
and?
That was more, yeah.
Well, hold up. I think, let me say something,
and?
Sir. I think, well, hold on. Listen, I love Django. I said it in the last show. I thought Django, I was wishing Django was going to ride in and save Northrop from the whippings. I'm so much about Django being our Kal-El, our Superman, that I blacked out on 12 Years a Slave. I think what John, this is John, right? John from Philly?
Yeah, John from Philadelphia.
I think John, what John is saying is there's a packaging going on, that now we're starting
right.
to see films in succession. Because, matter of fact, when I mentioned this last show, Serge, that when I saw 12 Years a Slave, there were trailers of, I think, two other films that were dealing with postbellum and antebellum slavery. Already you're starting to see a theme. And when they give us accolades, when have we gotten accolades by the Academy for being corporate raiders, for being politicians
okay, here's
on
the thing.
Screen? I mean, listen,
here's
hold
the
on.
Thing.
When you factor in Driving Miss Daisy, when you factor in It's Hard to Be a Pimp and the performance of it, and they gave those 3-6 Mafia, 3-6 Mafia has an Academy Award. When you start to actually tally this stuff up, going back to 1940 and getting Hattie McDaniel getting an award, I mean, you got an award for being a maid in 1940, and we get The Help in 2012.
Yeah,
I mean,
but
know,
also,
70 years,
why can't we
I mean,
cast a black man as James Bond or cast a black man as a role of like a Superman or Batman or whatever? Since the country has a black president, that's the
I mean
thing.
We have, we, I mean we got what's the guy, the Falcon? We have.
But he's a sidekick. We're sidekick.
Okay, well I don't know that.
Well, I'm gonna say,
but
I'm
you
saying,
had Blade.
What we're seeing
you
is
had Blade.
That was in 1997.
Ah, you see, before Obama became president. Okay, but here's the thing. Okay, would you rather have a film like 12 Years a Slave, which tells you the reality of what slavery is, which was ugly, or would you rather have the kind of slavery movies they made back in the 1940s and 50s and in the 1930s, where slaves were happy-go-lucky black people who were willing, happy to serve white people, and
Wrong
white
the
masters
South.
Were benevolent and treating black people as servants? I mean, as children.
Well, listen, we have under a minute. We're going to have to table this on Saturday. But I will say this much. I think the main thing here, gentlemen, is that if you have that, because listen, the Jewish community, they have their Holocaust films. We have to have.
Yeah, but are they
films.
Complaining about it? Are they complaining about
well,
it?
Well, because they have balance. They have Seinfeld. They have all these other depictions.
Right.
We
it's
don't
more
have
of a balance with. It's more of a balance
but this,
with
this,
other
this,
communities where
around,
you don't see that balance with the black
no,
community.
No. But then, hey, wait a minute. Then I could turn around and say you got the Best Man Holiday coming up. You got Black Nativity coming up. You have the other more black films which are coming out. And then on top of that, what about Go For Sisters? John Sales' new
Saturday,
movie?
Saturday.
We're out of time,
Saturday,
gentlemen.
Sorry. I got a gym.
Let's continue this on Saturday,
out.
Please.
Going out, Jimi Hendrix,
right.
Who knows? Saturday, folks, it's been real.
All right.
Always appreciate it.
All right.
Whenever it comes up. Who knows, Jimi Hendrix? And remember, Saturday, 6 p.m., the Comic Shop, and Afternoon at 7 p.m.
A band of gypsies.
Thank you.
trumpet.